Most bankers aren't ready to help you until after their third cup of coffee. But with Central National Bank's after-hours service, you don't have to wait for the bank lobby to open to get help. You can contact us from 6 to 8:30 in the morning or from 5 to 10 in the evening, and we'll connect you to a real, live, local person who can answer questions and fix problems 7 days a week. Bank different. Bank Central. Central National Bank. Member FDIC.
This is a Rogue Media Network podcast.
Bite hard, that'll make it by dawn. Cross the Brazos and Waco. I'm safe when I reach San Antonio. He glanced
back over his shoulder. All right, welcome back to the Waco History Podcast. We have an esteemed guest with us today, right, Rick?
Oh, I thought you were going to say I was the esteemed guest.
The listeners are used to your voice.
Judge Matt Johnson.
It's from, Justice Matt Johnson.
Well, it's whatever he tells you to call him. but Matt Johnson's here with us today, and he wrote an excellent book on the history of McLennan County Courthouse, the current one we have in its construction. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. But before we do, Matt, we'd love to hear a little bit about your history and how you were constructed.
Well, I was born and raised here in Waco, attended Waco Public Schools, and graduated from Ridgefield High School, then attended Baylor University, and then law school at Oklahoma City University. When I graduated from law school, I actually was a briefing attorney at the 10th Court of Appeals, where I work now, and I did about a year and a half stint there. Then I was in private practice, but public service called. And I went to the DA's office, and I was a felony prosecutor for 4 years before leaving. Then I was appointed by the county commissioners to serve a term as a justice of the peace. And after that, Judge George Allen announced his retirement, and I decided to run for his seat. And so fortunately was prevailed in the election and served there for 14 years. And then I've been at the Court of Appeals now for about 3.5 years as a justice, and then I'll start a term as Chief Justice on January 1st of 2025.
Oh, great. Fantastic. Yeah.
Now, for a minute there, I was going to say you were having a hard time holding a job, but the last few years have been good to you. It sounds like it's been pretty steady work.
It's been steady.
But you are not the first Judge Johnson in the family.
I'm not. Yeah. My dad was a district judge. Well, actually, dad was a Justice of the Peace, County Court at Law judge, and then a district judge for many, many years.
Yeah. So I'm imagining a young Matt Johnson running around McLennan County Courthouse. So your history with that building goes way back.
I mean, I can still remember the day my dad was sworn into the district court, and I was outside in the rotunda area, and some woman walked by and thought I was about to fall over the rotunda and yanked me by the arm so hard I never leaned over the rotunda again.
Yeah, so long service, of course, as a judge and now as a justice and soon to be coming as a chief justice, but the building he spent a lot of his career in now is the McLennan County Courthouse, and Judge Johnson is also a historian. And so I know him from those circles, and those two interests kind of collided, this personal and professional relationship to this iconic structure here in the county, and your career kind of collided in your interest in history. So let's get the name of the book out there. I know it's Plan Number 9, the construction of the 1902 McLennan County Courthouse. Talk a little bit about kind of the genesis of this project and just the idea to do it before we get into the content of it.
Well, growing up, I was down at the courthouse, you know, fairly regularly to see Dad. I'd always been curious about what caused that courthouse to be built, you know, in the location it was and the style of architecture, because there's really not another structure like it around here. Mm-hmm. When it was built, you know, it was just a Taj Mahal in town, and there was no other building that was, you know, had a dome on top, had marble interior floors, all of the beautiful stonework on it, just nothing compared to it, nothing at all. Alico building wasn't in downtown. I mean, so it was the center of the downtown area, besides the city hall, which was on the city square.
Mm-hmm. So I'm imagining a young Matt running and, like you mentioned, almost diving off the rotunda. What other shenanigans did you get into as a youngster? I'm just curious.
Spill the beans.
Yeah, no. I mean, because it's funny. I mean, having been someone who's crawled through a lot of old buildings from a professional standpoint, man, it's when you open those doors you're not supposed to open. You see things that you're like, oh, wow, that's how it got built, or this is how that works, or whatever. The normal public wouldn't do that. I'm just mm-hmm. thinking as the youngster may have gained curiosity by things he saw that other people didn't.
Well, there weren't a lot of shenanigans that I pulled because my dad was a real, real tough father. he didn't put up with much of that. Yeah. But he did give me the keys. And so I could go study there. It was a nice, quiet place to study. I could go to his courtroom and sit in his office and, didn't get distracted. And then when I was in high school, I was a photography major, and I went down and took photos of the courthouse and had access to all kinds of areas that the general public didn't have access to, balconies and
right.
Things like that. So it was that's been my access that not everybody gets to see.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Super cool. Okay, so how long did you work on putting this book together? I got to imagine that it was years of little bits and pieces coming together and finally deciding to make it a book.
It was. I started back when I first got elected as a district judge. And, you know, I was in there in the 54th for 14 years. And so I first put together a project that really amounted to a PowerPoint or a slideshow type deal. Mm-hmm. I gave the speech and showed the slideshow a few times, but once... You know, once you did that, it was gone. There was nothing tangible left, and people may have enjoyed it while they saw it, but made me want to write the book. But I really worked on it. The research for it probably took me, 6-8 years. But I did it in my spare time, and back then I had two young kids, and we were raising them, so we were busy with that.
Yeah, because not all the research was here. I mean, it looks like you had to pull stuff from other archives and.
You know, Texas Collection was great at Baylor for a lot of general information, but I really, was so lucky that James Riley Gordon's family gave all of his working papers to the University of Texas Architectural Archive, to the architectural school down there. And so I was able to go to Austin and look at his original drawings for this project. There's still some over at the county, but they've been opened and closed and rolled out and, rolled back up for 100 years now, or 120 years mm-hmm. now, and they're not in very good shape. But James Riley Gordon's documents and drawings had been put in a file, and he died in 1937, but his daughters lived in his residence until the 80s, and they're the ones who gave all the documents to the University of Texas. And so that was an absolute gold mine as far as finding information about the courthouse. And some of the images in the book have not ever been widely viewed here. Some of them are for the first time. People are getting to see those.
Mm. Wow. Mm. Great.
Yeah. Let's, and you said, I think I heard you say it took about a year once you wanted to sit down and kind of put the book together.
I had a script that I used for my, PowerPoint or documentary, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. And so I had to take that script and convert it to a book format and change the writing style. And that took about a year, year and a half. Mm-hmm. And then the publication process, I self-published this. And so that process took a while. I had to use a different computer program for book, formatting and stuff like that.
So he's not only a judge, he's a publisher and a writer.
Now he is, yeah. Yeah, and he's got the movie rights, if anybody's listening, yeah.
Okay, so walk us through the construction of the county courthouse.
Well, in 1893, the legislature created the 54th District Court. The county had a courthouse on the corner of 2nd and Franklin mm-hmm. that had one district courtroom. And in that district courtroom was the 19th District Court. And so now we had a county with two district courts and a courthouse with one courtroom. And the county courthouse was also, they were renting space for other offices, in nearby commercial buildings. And they wound up renting space in the Provident building for the 19th Court. 19th Court moved out. And then the 54th moved into the old courthouse. Mm-hmm. But the noise in the vicinity, it was really, it grown up to be an industrial area. Mm-hmm. And there was a boiler plant down there. I believe the Aransas Pass Railroad came through every afternoon, right, made a lot right. of noise. And so they'd just have to halt court because, I mean, there wasn't air conditioning. They had to have the right. windows open.
Right.
And so it did interfere with all the proceedings. And that really is, you know, probably one of the bigger reasons that the courthouse is where it is now. It wasn't in the industrial area of town.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's one thing people don't realize when you're walking downtown. We're on this, you got this great riverscape and the Riverwalk and Indian Springs Park. Yeah, that was the industrial heart of early Waco. It's where, besides where rail cars were worked on, the railroad went, you know, the rail tracks went through there. Livery stables were down there just so they could just shovel the stuff right into the river. I mean, that was your disposal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It worked really well as a disposal system.
Well, and so that having, you know, the 54th created kind of started the process. I think it had been proposed before, but this time it had some momentum. The Young Men's Business League got on board with constructing a new courthouse. They wanted to be a city of great industry, good services. And so they wanted to have a new courthouse. They wanted to have a new bridge across the Brazos, mm-hmm. Iron Bridge. It's now at the foot of Washington Avenue down on across mm-hmm. the Brazos. And then they wanted to have a new train depot.
Yeah.
And so they managed to get those three. The fourth item was navigation of the Brazos River, which that's still pretty elusive. And so that.
But they gave it a solid try.
They did. They gave it a try.
Yeah. Yeah. You think about that time in history, and I don't have these numbers in front of me. Steve and I have talked about this before. Waco was maybe the fifth largest city in Texas. McLennan County was the fourth or fifth largest county in Texas. I mean, with the cotton industry here, it was a financially wealthy community or county compared to many of the others. So I could totally see the city leaders wanting to kind of stake their claim. A lot of the other counties, you know, if you look at some of the work of these architects, had already built their kind of their masterpiece courthouse. So Waco was a little behind the times, I think, on finally getting one built. So you can see how all those things would come together in the timeline to make something happen.
Well, and so the Young Men's Business League being behind the project and other projects, like I've mentioned, they started a petition. And they had a petition signed by 1,500 land-owning, tax-paying citizens, which was the requirement in the day. Mm-hmm. And they presented that to the commissioner's court in early 1900. And mm-hmm. the commissioner's court called for an election to issue bonds to build a new courthouse. And then the real debate began between the different folks pro and con, put it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I looked at the book. The city overwhelmingly voted for it, and then the urban areas, the rural areas, were against it. Yeah,
right. Most of the votes against it came out of Moody and West. Mm-hmm. Those communities kind of thought it was a little bit of a boondoggle for Waco business folks to benefit themselves, and they just didn't see the benefit in it. And I mean, there was quite a back and forth between the West Times, I believe, West Times, and then the Waco paper. Right. Waco paper was in favor of it. West paper wasn't, and they traded barbs.
Was the objection about the bridge in particular, about the courthouse, the depot?
It was probably about the courthouse.
Yeah.
That's the stuff that I saw the most debate on. I don't think anybody had a problem with a new bridge mm-hmm. across the Brazos. And it was going to be a partnership with the city, mm-hmm. city and county. The new courthouse was, you know, that was all on the county's ticket. And they were going to have to pay for every bit of it. And I think the bond issuance requested $250,000 for the courthouse and a jail.
Okay.
So, you know, that went along, and it fortunately it passed. And real quickly after it passed, they started issuing a request for bids for property to put the courthouse on. Mm-hmm. Started looking for that, and then they also requested architects submit plans, and plan number 9 was submitted by James Riley Gordon, and so he was, I believe there were 10 total. There were only 2 that were considered seriously by the consulting architect Wesley Clark Dodson.
Who was the local architect, right?
He was, and I called him the consulting architect. What happened was the county commissioners hired him to assist them in evaluating these architectural plans. And, you know, James Riley Gordon was a prolific courthouse architect here in Texas. But ours, and he had kind of a stock set of plans. And if the county was a larger county, they could add a wing on, you know, and he usually kept them symmetrical, so they'd add 2 wings if it was a, you know, but if it was a small county, it's just kind of a square building.
Right.
Ours is an original. I mean, absolute original work by James Riley Gordon. And the closest thing of his that he ever designed to it was probably the Arizona State Capitol. Mm-hmm. And anyway.
Yeah. And we I'm sure you could say a few things about Gordon's career. It seems like if you look at the courthouses he did in Texas, this is one of the last that he did here. So I don't know if he saw it as his grand courthouse that he did, or, you know, I don't know if he found anything along those lines where he gave any narrative about the McLennan County Courthouse.
I think when the whole process started, he was still in San Antonio. Then he moved his practice to Dallas. And he didn't stay in Dallas for a very long time, maybe a couple of 3 years,
right,
4 at the most. And then he moved to New York City, and he designed some buildings there, and he became an architect of some notoriety in New York City.
Yeah.
And they did the Ellis County Courthouse, I think, was one of his.
I believe he did.
Yeah.
I think the Weatherford Courthouse.
Mm-hmm.
About 12 of them, mm-hmm, which is a pretty good stock of courthouses.
Yeah. Right. And of very different architectural,
mm-hmm,
you know, designs.
Yeah.
Some very Victorian, and then ours, which has a different style. What would you call the style that ours is built in?
Corinthian. It's a classic Corinthian structure. Beaux Arts is what a lot of people refer to it as.
Settling on plan number 9, was that easy out of the different designs, or were there some debate? What might we have ended up with? I wanted to ask about that, and also the property, kind of where it may have ended up, other properties looked at.
There wasn't much of a debate about it. Mm-hmm. Wesley Clark Dodson he wasn't so kind to the runner-up. He really wasn't. He said that even with changes, it wouldn't be anything you'd want to have as far as your courthouse in your county. he said, you know, that it couldn't be improved.
And uh-huh.
He said that the plan submitted by James Riley Gordon was delicate and scholarly.
Okay.
And just thought it was a magnificent structure, and just spoke, you know, his recommendation letter was just so glowing about the design.
Mm. And did they consider other properties as far as where to place the courthouse? Were some runner-ups?
I don't know that there were any other locations. I never found much about that. Occasionally, I'd come across a newspaper article when I was going through the newspapers from the time, and there would just be a quick story about the county closed on a deal with there were 2 landowners who owned the whole block.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't own it beyond the alley, but on the Washington Avenue side back to the alley, it was only 2 families that they had to buy the property from.
And I'm assuming St. Paul's was already there. That mm-hmm. church has been in place for quite a bit.
Yeah, St. Paul's was there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, if I were citing it, some things I would think about, it's at a higher elevation, right? If you think about our downtown space, which you can't really see it because we have these buildings around, but courthouse is up pretty high on mm-hmm. on solid ground there, which is always great for drainage, whether it's stormwater drain or sewer drain, whatever. Better breezes up there, get up higher, back when that was your only ventilation. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could see why that would be a desirable place. In fact, a minute ago, Matt and I were talking about or I asked Matt, why isn't our courthouse the town square, which is the case in many, or if not most, of the counties in Texas? And I don't know if we know the complete reason, but what did we talk about there?
Well, the county, I mean, the city put the city hall right in the middle of the town square. The first two courthouses that the county had, they were not, I mean, one was a log cabin. The other one was a two-story structure that was just a big square block.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I believe in 1870 or so, they built the third courthouse that was there at 2nd and Franklin. But for some reason, the city fathers had the city hall as the town square. It was the center of commerce. You know, you see those old pictures with all the cotton bales that people would bring in and things like that, and all the other agricultural products, and you know, the cattle coming through town going across the suspension bridge. But
there's a good story there, left to history somewhere on how that decision got made, because it is
they never surrendered the land. They grabbed it and didn't surrender it. The third courthouse was kind of an interesting looking building as well. Did you learn much about that in doing this research?
I learned a little bit about it, mm-hmm. enough to include some information in it, you know, about it in the book.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually I believe designed by Wesley Clark Dodson, the mm-hmm. man they hired to be the consulting architect.
Mm-hmm.
And but you know, there were some stories about the state of the building, and, mm-hmm. and they were really concerned. There was one of the big issues that they tried to pitch to the voters is that structure is very susceptible to fire.
Yeah.
And
well, that's every county in Texas, right? Has a story of the courthouse burning down in the 19th century. Yeah.
And then you lose all your land records. And I mean, mm-hmm. that's a substantial loss, because then you got to recreate them, and there's got to be a lot of court proceedings to make, you know, to iron out title issues. And so the McLennan County Courthouse in its day was about as fireproof as you could get. The one we have now was, but there was a lot of concern that it would burn. And actually it did burn. Did burn after, the Crow Brothers Laundry bought it, and they ran a laundry out of it. And then it did burn, I believe in the 40s, something like that, mm-hmm. 1940s.
Mm-hmm. So one thing in reading your narrative, I noticed that the commissioner's court that, you know, approved the construction, got the bonds passed, selected the plan, everything. I didn't really give a lot of detail here, but they were not the commissioner's court. None of them were on the commissioner's court that received the building a few years later. There was a wholesale change in commissioners. Was there some political fallout that had to do with the courthouse?
I never saw anything in the paper about that, but you know, you hear the stories at the courthouse that was one of the reasons the commissioner's court totally turned over. And the county judge, J.N. Gallagher, was the county judge when the vote went through. He intended to retire, or not retire, he just intended not to be county judge anymore at that time. And he wound up as Chief Justice of the Court of Appeals in the 1920s. But the commissioners, I think, probably did suffer some losses, because you know, there were a lot of people out in the rural parts who were opposed, and the city, you know, the commissioner's precincts come into the city, and it divides the city up in four different pieces.
Right.
But the more rural parts, you know, they probably carried the day.
Yeah. The population in McLennan County until the 20s was more rural than urban.
Right.
And on that second court, the county judge was Judge Gerald, mm-hmm. which we've spent a lot of time on here. Very interesting person, kind of a firebrand. I could see him, you know, having an axe to grind. And I mean, he'd just killed. I mean, that could have been 3 or 4 years before.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
If I remember my timeline, right. 90s, yeah. Killed two men. And then gets elected county judge. And he'd been county judge before, so he came back for a three-peat. And
so if the polls start dipping, Justice Johnson, there's a way to boost your approval rating.
get in a gunfight. But I could assume there's a story, a political story in there as well.
Mm-hmm. I think there probably was.
Yeah.
One of my favorite terms is value engineering, which just means being cheap. You talked about the original plans, kind of the beauty and the artistry, and but then that's not necessarily what was built. So what did you discover as you looked at those original plans and then a structure that you're very familiar with that actually exists? What were some of the big choices maybe that were made in that value engineering?
Well, the architect wanted to have round courtrooms.
Oh, interesting.
They were designed for acoustics.
Mm-hmm.
Theaters for the performing arts in the day were rounded, helped mm-hmm. with acoustics. And so they thought that was, he thought that was something that would be great in a courtroom. So everybody could hear everything, the lawyers and the judge and everybody said. But they also had real big balconies. They took up more space. The original plans had real ornate decoration and statuary outside the mm-hmm. courthouse. And ultimately, you've been in the county courthouse, you know the courtrooms, the corners are rounded off, but the courtrooms aren't round. I mean, they kind of mm-hmm. trimmed it back. And I get that. They're the ones who have to pay the tab. And mm-hmm. so reality sets in.
Yeah.
But what a lot of people don't know about our courthouse is that they still had courtrooms that were two stories tall. We had galleries on the second floor,
mm-hmm.
and I mean they were still you walked in there, it was an impressive venue, mm-hmm. Kind of a majestic courtroom, and all the judges' benches, you know, now they're to the side except in the 54th District courtroom. That bench faces the door. All the judges' benches face the door. They had galleries around three sides. There weren't any gallery behind the judge's bench because they didn't want people up there behind the judge. And they were, you know, they had marble columns in them. If you ever want to see the marble columns, they're now up in the Court of Appeals courtroom and a couple of other trial courts up there on the fourth floor, excuse me.
Mm.
They had different... I think they had different paint colors. They have different, the caps on the marble columns are different orders of architecture. One's Corinthian, one's composite, and one's Ionic. And you can go, you know, I'd been courthouse forever until I read that in the plans and in the information from James Riley Gordon. I went and I looked and I go, by golly, these columns do have different caps. I mean, they did right. have different designs. It was still a neat place, and the fact that those galleries have been floored over and turned into other spaces is regretful to me because I think those grand courtrooms would be wonderful one day if we could renovate them and bring them back.
Well, I've seen the photos from the Harry L. Washburn trials, those images where you know that's before it's floored, and you really just get a sense of what that space would have been like. Originally.
Right. Those are, and even the Texas Historical Commission is so glad that those photos were taken. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Judge Bartlett was the judge at the time, and he was the one who let them take photos during the trial and televise the trial.
Right.
But those photos are historically priceless because they detail a lot of information that has been covered up, torn down, and, you know, if you ever did a restoration, they'd probably be the things to follow.
Mm-hmm. I think you also point out there was going to be a fountain in the rotunda. That was one.
Well, you know, Rick was talking about earlier about ventilation.
Yeah.
You know, that was another big deal to James Riley Gordon, was having good ventilation. And he sold it as that the air would come up through the rotunda and you could open those glass windows on the rotunda and let all the hot air out. And in the bottom, there would be this fountain, you know, this cooling fountain. And it would, you know, that water would cool off there and it'd go up through the rotunda and all the windows, you know, will actually fully open. I mean, they're full casement mm-hmm. windows. And that was one other design, strong point as far as ventilation goes.
Mm-hmm. And he's not totally incorrect. At the time, I mean, that was the technology. Now, it's not going to get you to 72 degrees.
But it's a giant swamp cooler kind of approach.
I see where he's going with that thought. I almost took offense at you a minute ago, Stephen. which is not uncommon.
That's good. Then it's been a successful podcast.
Yeah, value engineering is a very valuable part of the construction process. It doesn't always mean things are going to be cheaper. Sometimes it's a better way to do it.
It usually means worse.
Well, it usually means the architect has designed a little over designed what they did, and you have to pull things in to the budget that's allowable.
Okay.
As a former construction professional, I've got to defend my industry.
Well, to your credit, they come in under budget, right, for the project.
Well, they came in over budget a little bit.
I thought you said that it was like $250,000 were approved, but it was $210,000 or something like that.
It was $210,000 without furniture.
Oh, okay.
And also they still had to build a jail.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that's without the jail.
And actually the contract price, the exact contract price I think was $193,000, mm-hmm. something like that, and it came in at $210,000.
Okay.
So it did go over, but you know, all the information I've got, no one was upset with that dollar value. They mm-hmm. you know, they praised Tom Lovell, the contractor who built the courthouse. He was out of Denton, and his crew, you know, they just talked about how well they worked. And I think the county judge or maybe the county attorney said he didn't think there was any finer construction on a courthouse in the state of Texas, and thought that we got every dollar's worth that we spent out of the construction.
Mm-hmm. Well, since we're on construction, mm-hmm. you know, I'd like to throw out a few observations. You've got a great photo, and I looked to try to find more photos of the construction. They're probably out there somewhere. But it is amazing. We don't build buildings like this anymore, right? This building is mainly block construction, like literal solid stone blocks that have been cut and are set on top of each other. There's no... as far as I know, I mean, it's not like there's rebar in there. There's nothing connecting them. It's the weight of the stone is holding everything together, you know, and they're not using mortar to try to keep everything level as they go up. So those stonemasons are getting this stuff. I mean, their ability to do what they did is a lost art really in our world today. You can tell from the picture too, there was some steel infrastructure. So instead of using wood, they wisely used steel for some of the interior superstructure. And then just that block construction, some of the rock was granite, that first layer. Like when you drive by it, you'll see that pink layer on the bottom. And that's from
Burnett County. It's the same pink granite that was used to build the state capitol. Same source of that. Next, Tom Lovell, the contractor who built this, was actually a stonecutter on the Texas State Capitol. He helped in the construction of that. And the contract to build the courthouse required that they use local labor, with the exception of some specialized skilled folks.
And we always thank our city and community leaders when they make those choices. That's very good. Yes.
Right. But I think the stonecutters were probably some of Tom Lovell's folks from out of town. I mean, you know.
Sure. It's a highly specialized skill.
Yeah. In McLennan County in the day, there wasn't a lot of stone cutting going on around mm-hmm. here.
Yeah. A couple other observations. Not a whole lot of safety equipment on the job. You know, we definitely live in a much safer world in the construction world. And I bet if we were able to zoom in on a lot of those stone cutters, a lot of them are probably missing fingers. Probably a lot of them go by stubby or whatever. It was a different world. They've got some pretty rudimentary cranes setting things, whereas today, you know, something like skid steers or bobcats, different kinds of equipment that's so ubiquitous now for lifting heavy loads. I mean, that was people and some pretty rudimentary machines lifting these multi-ton blocks of rock and setting them. And anyway, pretty amazing to think about. But then going back to some of the things we talked about, fireproof and making a statement. I mean, these were the things that you did to do that.
Yeah. And the plaster walls, mm-hmm. that was one thing that they, you know, they didn't want wood exposed. One interesting thing about the wood trim on the courthouse, there's some around all the doors and the
sure,
windows and things
right.
like that. The first floor was actually not called the first floor. It was called the subfloor when it was built. And it was finished out with pine as far as the trim work went. The top three floors were finished with white oak because they were actually supposed to be the nice floors of the courthouse. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing you'll notice the next time you're in there. You'll notice that downstairs when you walk in, you know, that basement level. I mean, there wasn't that terrazzo floor down there with the map of McLennan County mm-hmm. on it. It was just a concrete floor. It was mm-hmm. not, you know, it wasn't taken care of over the years. There weren't offices down there. I think it was Judge Ray Mormino when he was county judge. He's the one who said we need to fix it up and start using the space down there.
So when did the front entrance to the courthouse flip? When did it become underneath the staircase instead of up the staircase and into that first floor?
Well, I mean, it's always been available, but it became the primary entrance when we had to do the courthouse security. You know, when I was growing up, every door to the courthouse was unlocked during the day, and you could walk up the front stairs, the side stairs,
right.
you know, come in the back door without any access keys or anything like that. But I think when they had to secure the courthouse, that they had to figure out where to put the you know, the magnetometer and the screening stuff and, you know, the thing to screen bags and all that. And they just had to have the space to do it. And so that's why they used that first floor, the ground floor.
Yeah, yeah. Which is, you know, not necessarily as impressive as going up that flight of stairs and into that first floor.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Anyway. Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else about the construction that stood out or you want to bring out of the book?
Well, I think that people need to occasionally go to the courthouse and look at it, not just walk past the things getting to the office you're going to.
Right.
I think you need to stop and appreciate it. And one thing I tell everybody to do is to go to that first floor and stand in the middle of that map of McLennan County and look up. Hmm. That is the best view at the courthouse around. The second best view is when you go up to the very top, to the fourth floor, you know, in the rotunda area, where you're real close to the dome.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the sunlight comes through there, and it comes through the stained glass. And, you know, it's just kind of a neat view of the courthouse. Everybody's usually busy going through there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're not taking their time to soak it in.
And dealing with some pretty serious issues a lot of times. They're not looking at the beauty of the architecture.
Right. Mm-hmm. They're thinking about some other important issues in their life. And I certainly understand that. But sometime if you go do that, the courthouse had, they also had the stained glass windows in the ceilings of the courtrooms. So you had the two-story courtrooms with the gallery, and then there were stained glass windows. They're still there in the Court of Appeals courtroom, which belonged, that was the 74th District Court's balcony. And they're also in the County Court at Law number 2, which is newly located on the fourth floor. But that was the balcony for the 19th District Court. There were 6 art glass skylights or stained glass skylights in the 54th because it was the largest courtroom because it was going to try criminal cases.
Right.
But they were lost in a fire in the 30s. There was actually a fire in the attic and they managed to get it put out before too much damage was done. But it was also the 30s and money was short. And so they didn't spend the money to get the skylights remade.
Gotcha. You know, another thing that comes to mind about the construction we don't build buildings today for 100-year life. And I don't know if necessarily they were thinking of 100-year life, but you know, we're clocking 120 now and we don't foresee that building going away anytime soon. I mean, that I think that speaks to the longevity of the construction. And it's a very similar construction to the buildings you see in Europe of that stone type construction that have been around multiple centuries. So that back when you said there's nothing else like it in Waco, that makes that point. So,
well, and even at the luncheon after the courthouse was dedicated and they had a luncheon for Tom Lovell, to honor him for building such a good courthouse, one of the county officials stood up and said he saw no reason it couldn't last more than 50 years.
Which, keep in mind, their last one lasted less than 30 years.
Yeah,
so, right. I mean, that was the standard before this one.
So they had some expectation that it would last a while, but
Yeah.
No idea it'd be 120 years later.
Yeah. You know, a lot of times in construction projects for public projects, whether it's schools or whatever, city, county buildings, there people do complain about the cost. But the reality is most of those buildings are built for a much longer lifespan than your typical commercial construction. And, you know, the taxpayers are getting the benefit of that longevity.
Yeah. You know, and I think in Texas in particular, our courthouses, I think the Courthouse Preservation Program that started in the 1990s under Bush. And I mean, it's the identity of a lot of these counties in Texas. I mean, it is this that central building that makes that county unique. And it seems as a county, we've cared for the courthouse fairly well. I mean, because I know some shape that other courthouses were in Texas counties, but it seems like we've stewarded that building well.
I think that it's been maintained. There have been some modifications made to it that probably shouldn't have been done. I mean, we've had some of the caps on the marble columns chipped away because they've put a wall there. I mean, there used to be a marble column in the middle of a wall in the grand jury room when it was located in the courthouse. And there is something, but I don't think there's anything that's not reversible. I don't think there's anything that's been altered on the building that can't be fixed. One of the hardest things to fix, if there ever is a renovation project, will be the walkway from the old county jail to the courthouse, and then the walkway from the annex building to the courthouse. They really chiseled on a lot of the brick. I mean, not brick, the stonework to get those things to fit in. And so there's some damage there. But we've got a new roof, you know, we've got, it's not leaking. There aren't problems like that. And so as long as we can use it for as long as we can, and then once we outgrow it, let's make sure we restore it to the way it needs to be. I think that'd be a worthwhile project.
Well, you mentioned the two best views in the courthouse. Are there some other features? Say somebody's listening to this and they've got a little time and they go, what are some other things that you would recommend people look for, maybe little details or elements in the courthouse that you think are interesting?
Well, everybody looks at the front elevation of the courthouse. The backside of the courthouse really has some, it's just very symmetrical. I mean, the windows are all framed and there's beautiful stonework around them. The dome has eagles surrounding it, and
there's one duck up there, right?
No, they took that. It was still. I got a photo of it when they took it down. It was still a bird of prey, but it wasn't quite as vicious a bird of prey.
Yeah, it's gone now. People who are around know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and that was part of that Beaux-Arts style of having sculptures as a part of the architecture, right?
Right. Because
there's several of them on there. Do you know what they all represent and who they are?
Well, Themis is on top, and she's the Greek goddess of justice. And the reason we know it's Themis is because she has a Greek hairdo. Now, someone had to tell me what a Greek hairdo was, you understand. But she's not blindfolded, and she holds the scales of justice and a sword. And it's just kind of the divine, not divine right, but it's really just the natural order of justice and law and fairness is what she stands for. And then, of course, Lady Justice is on the front pediment of the courthouse. As you're looking at it, she will be to the right, and she is blindfolded. And she's the Roman counterpart to Themis, being Greek. And then on the left front pediment, there's it's really a liberty. It's really a symbol of liberty. It's still a lady, but it's kind of reminiscent of the Statue of Liberty. Holds a tablet and stands for just nothing more than liberty and fairness.
Now, the original Themis, I know Themis was a problem for a while. So where's the original Themis? So we have a recreation of Themis up there because the county kept having to spend money, right?
I'm not sure. I'm sure Themis is in storage somewhere. Yeah.
But you can't say where Themis is.
I don't know. Trust me.
Witness protection program. Yeah.
But I know several times they had to do work on Themis, so eventually they decided the better thing to do would just be put a heartier Themis up there.
I think it's a fiberglass thing. Okay. But it'll probably last longer than those statues. I mean, they were made out of zinc and they were pressed out. Yeah. So they did 110 years worth of service, and that's about all you can expect.
You know, one of the things as I was walking into the building here at Alico, Matt and I kind of walked in together looking back towards the courthouse. The thing that when I look at these old pictures, you can see all this, you see the architecture so much better. When I go over there and look now, all I see are pecan trees and maybe a couple pieces of the building sticking up, you know, around the back. We find that a little ironic, right? I mean, people love trees and what they mean, what they bring, but also it hides the beauty of what's there.
Yeah, huge trees blocking the courthouse view. Yeah.
There was a reference in the county commissioner's minutes that they hired a man to plant those trees, probably 1903. And mm-hmm. I think it was 17 trees, had to guarantee they'd live for a year. That's what they wanted, was the guarantee for that. And of course, a lot of them have lived a lot longer than that. But mm-hmm. yeah, they do block the view. And then at some point in time, someone planted some magnolia trees around there and kind of up in the corners. And that's probably not a good idea, because I think they had some concerns about the roots messing with the foundation of the courthouse. So anyway, but they do block the view too.
Yeah, all the time. There seemed to be a little controversy on the cornerstone when it was set.
It wasn't so much controversy as it was they couldn't fit all the names on the cornerstone because the county commissioner's court had turned over totally.
Well, which sounds like code for me, like, we're not recognizing you guys.
Well, they didn't. So they didn't recognize.
But then they didn't recognize themselves either.
So, they didn't recognize themselves. They decided to dedicate it to the taxpayers of McLennan County.
There you go.
And Judge Gerald said, he goes, it just wouldn't be right to put our names on it when the other ones had just as important a role in getting the bond issuance passed and in contracting with the architect and purchasing the land. And so, I don't know that there was any necessarily bad feelings about it. They just couldn't chisel that many names in that block.
Well, any other elements you want to make sure you get in? How did they find the book? I mean, how do they get a copy of the book?
Well, Fabled Bookstore has been carrying it. Mm-hmm. And so they're available there. Mm-hmm. The only thing I would add about the courthouse is when you do go over there, if you ever go in and look at it, there is one of those old zinc eagles is inside the courthouse.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
On the first floor, and you get an idea how big they are because you see them up on the building, and they just don't, they're so far away that you don't realize how big they are. But there's one of the originals is in there, and the recreations were tracked real closely to the originals. Mm-hmm. The only thing they did was they left out the eyes being lit at night on the recreations, because the original ones, the eyes would they'd light them up at night, and there was one account that said they'd light them up red. So that might have been
might have something to do with that fire.
Well, yeah. I think that's a crime deterrent. That's another way to tell potential wrongdoers.
It probably kept the grackles away too.
It may have. Yeah. We'll try whatever we can.
Yeah.
Well, Justin Johnson, I want to appreciate you doing the book, because as you're right, I mean, you can do a presentation. You can go to every lunch club in town, but then, you can't hold it. And mm-hmm. so I appreciate you taking the time to do the book and getting it out there. And we'd recommend folks grab it. Rick, any other questions?
No, thank you so much for doing this, taking the time to do it, putting it together, kind of sharing your wisdom on doing it. There's probably a lot of people in Waco who've always wanted to write their little history about something. So hopefully that you're an inspiration for them to get it done and self-publish if they even need to. But yeah, it's great that you captured this. Thanks for coming and talking to us today.
You bet. Thank y'all for having me here. Sure enjoyed it.
Thank you. The Brazos and Waco, ride
hard, that'll make it by dawn. Thanks for listening to the Waco History Podcast. Like what you heard? Subscribe, rate, and review our show on iTunes so we can reach more listeners. You can find show notes and info on every episode at wacohistorypodcast.com and more info on Waco's past at wacohistory.org. Our theme music, used with permission, is Cross the Brazos at Waco, performed by the late Billy Walker. For more info on Billy's music, go to billywalker.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. I
San Antonio.
This has been a Rogue Media Network production.